Broadcasting from the Pabst Theater Pub in downtown Milwaukee, I'm Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We took the show on the road today so we could have our public forums in a public venue, this time in Milwaukee, and we have some face-to-face conversations about the various issues regarding the election 2012. We just talked about last night's presidential debate and how we thought the candidates did. Now we want to give you an opportunity to rate the media's performance in covering election issues. How are we doing? Pass, fail, and why? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Or if you're here in our on-location audience, our remote studio audience, you can raise your hand and we will get a microphone to you. And by all means, if you are in the Milwaukee area, you are invited to join us on location. I'll be here for another hour talking with my guests about media coverage of the campaigns and of election 2012. Kathleen Dunn will be here with her guests from 9 until 11 this morning. Well, let me welcome our guests as we talk about media and politics, from fact-checking to fairness to the coverage of the debates and the campaigns. And we're going to wonder, are Americans getting the information that we need to make informed decisions at the polls? We have three guests with us, very distinguished panel. Eugene Kane is with us, longtime columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he still writes a weekly piece for the Sunday paper. Good morning, Eugene.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Very nice to meet you in person. Eugene has been a guest on the program a number of times, but he's usually on the phone in Milwaukee, and I'm usually in our Madison studio. So this is a pleasure to be able to meet our guests face-to-face as well as listeners face-to-face as well. Also with us, a new guest to Wisconsin Public Radio, but very knowledgeable on journalism and media issues. She is Sumana Chattopadhyay, Assistant Professor of Communication at Marquette University. Good morning.
Good morning. It's wonderful to be here today.
It's very nice to have you here. And another guest who has been with us, first time meeting her in person, Jessica McBride, Senior Journalism Lecturer at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, we have a lot to talk about, and again, I presume our listeners will have a lot to say as we try to rate the media. You can give us a grade or tell us what you're lacking, what you want to hear more of. We heard a caller from our last hour when we were talking about the debates, a caller who said he thought that the debate format last night and the whole setup from the moderator to camera angle was biased in favor of President Obama. Eugene, what did you think?
Well, I didn't see the debate format itself being biased in favor of President Obama. I'm not really sure where that's coming from. I think all of these debates, they seem over the years that I've been watching debates, they do sort of mix and mingle the format. So I think some play to certain candidates' strengths, some don't. But I didn't necessarily see that debate last night, the town hall, or the moderator as being necessarily biased against Romney or in favor of Obama. Mm-hmm.
Did you see anything along those lines, Sumana?
I kind of agree with Eugene on that. I think that what happens with a lot of these debates, because I study debates, is that oftentimes the incumbent, in this case President Obama, ends up talking more because he has a record. And so that's why maybe in terms of the time that he speaks, sometimes people perceive that, you know, he's saying more. The public is hearing more about him, and the moderator is spending a little bit more time on him. But I did not see that either. I thought it was a pretty well-done debate.
And Jessica, I know you had some thoughts on the role of the moderator, in particular Candy Crowley last night.
Well, if Obama spoke longer, and he did, I think it was about 4 minutes longer, you know, people on the right would probably argue that the moderator let him do that and didn't effectively control the debate and the conversation. Although certainly she was more assertive than Jim Lehrer, who was basically Clint Eastwood's empty chair, I think. But obviously, there was this moment in the debate where Candy Crowley stepped out of the role of neutral moderator and became a fact-checker of Mitt Romney and inserted herself into the debate in you know, in a more active role, which she had sort of promised to do before it. And she steps in and she starts fact-checking Romney in a way that helps President Obama. So conservatives look at this and they say that's not fair. You know, she didn't jump in and do aggressive fact-checking of the president. And also, you know, the point that she was fact-checking, this comment he had made, and whether or not it was a terrorist act, you know, the Libyan embassy incident and the Rose Garden speech, you know, she might have been sort of factually accurate in one way, but she was contextually completely wrong in another way. I mean, you could debate what she said. And so I think conservatives look at things like that, and they say, no, this was not a fair debate.
You know, I'm hoping that my producer in Madison is listening, because we played this clip last hour, but I'm sure we have new listeners. Let's take a listen to the clip where Candy Crowley is fact-checking.
I want to make sure we get that for the record, because it took the president 14 days before he called the attack in Benghazi an act of terror.
Get the transcript.
He did, in fact, sir. So let me call it an act of terror.
Can you say that a little louder, Candy?
He did call it an act of terror. It did as well take 2 weeks or so for the whole idea of there being a riot out there about this tape to come out. You're correct about that.
The administration...
So she did say, yes, President Obama was right here, and yes, Mitt Romney was right here, didn't she, Jessica?
Well, I mean, if you look at the detailed summary of what the administration's comments were on Libya, it's a lot more complex than what she presented there. And, you know, a true fact-checking, a thorough fact-checking that's fair would get into all of the different statements. I mean, he had gone on The View sometime after the Rose Garden speech and specifically wouldn't call it a terrorist act, for example. So, and obviously the administration, you know, put out or allowed to be put out this line or narrative that it was about this video for quite some time. So, I mean, you can sort of argue, yeah, maybe he did actually utter the words, but sort of contextually it's I think, not the complete story and perhaps not the appropriate role for the moderator to intervene only on that one point. There were many comments in that debate, you know, where she could have stepped in and attempted to fact-check different comments, such as this debate over the federal role of oil production, which was a heated, also, you know, he said moment, where she didn't feel the need to step in. And I just feel, you know, in summary here, that the media should bend over backwards to give the perception of fairness, because right or wrong, there is a belief by a large chunk of the electorate that the media is not fair in these debates going in.
I thought it was an awesome moment in debate history when she basically fact-checked them in real time, and I can't imagine anybody, particularly journalists who, you know, have been quibbling about the role of the moderator and really the role of fact-checking in this campaign. I mean, to me, she lived up to... And granted, it was one of those moments where I think Romney put himself into it because he pushed the issue, which required her to fact-check him. So it reminds me of the line about Romney basically saying they're not going to be beholden to fact-checkers during their campaign, which is one of the things that I think has set a tone for this campaign, which allows candidates to get away with a lot of stuff. On this night, he didn't get away with it, and I think that was awesome.
Well, Obama got away with a lot of things, and that's where people see it as one-sided.
Let's get Sumana in on this, since you do also research fact-checking. Should a moderator be doing that kind of fact-checking?
Well, I think that I can understand why people would not always be happy with that fact, because it's quite rare. It doesn't happen that often in debates, and I'm thinking... the response might have been the way it was mixed, because it was a town hall format, and in a town hall debate, the moderator is supposed to play a minimal role, because it is kind of, that's what I've been hearing, that the audience talks directly to the candidate. So maybe that's why she faced more of an opposition from some segments. But I kind of agree with Eugene that it was one moment. It was kind of the context of the situation that kind of necessitated her to kind of maybe step in and make a comment on that. But I can see the why, you know, as Jessica says, didn't happen with a lot of other statements. So maybe that's why a part of the audience was thinking, you know, it wasn't fair. But I definitely think that it was the moment more than anything else that necessitated her to step in.
Let me stay with you, Samana, and talk a little bit about it. Seems that this year in particular, we're seeing more and more fact-checking going on. Maybe it's not immediate, but soon after a debate, you're seeing reports on this was right, this was not.
Absolutely. Actually, you know, I'm conducting research on debates, so I watch those debates with my students. And they're required to tweet during the debate, and they constantly check Twitter, and even in Twitter, you know, they follow all these different news outlets that fact check for every single statement that is being made in the debate. So it's all kind of in, you know, immediate. And I think that's why the need for fact checking has kind of gone up in this campaign. I think social media has a big role to play in it. We have so much information out there. So I kind of go back to the debate in the 80s. I've read a lot on that. It was so different because, you know, the debate happened, then the news, then the spin room started. Everybody in the media used to spin the debate and talk about what was right and wrong. But now it happens while the debate is going on. Like, think about the basically the binder of women comment that came up, and immediately, within seconds, there was a Tumblr about it. And everybody on Twitter was retweeting tons of, you know, different numbers of stories that were immediately created when that happened. I think it's because of the environment that we live in that fact-checking has become so important in this campaign. But I had a conversation about this with my students, who are all young voters, yesterday in class. And some of them said that we don't necessarily know if this is a that great of a thing because it confuses us more. There are so many facts, you know, floating out there. And so sometimes it makes us even more cynical because we make up our minds thinking, oh, look, this candidate said this right. And then somebody else says he said it wrong. And then again, while we have processed that information, something else comes up that tells us, oh, no, the other candidate was right.
We are talking about media and politics and media coverage of election 2012 from the debates to the campaigns. And we're welcoming your input. What grade do you give the media? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, broadcasting from the Pabst Theater Pub in downtown Milwaukee. And as you can hear, we have an audience on location. You are invited, if you're in the Milwaukee area, to stop by and say hi. Have a cup of coffee, a pastry, take part in the conversation. We'd love to see you here at the Pabst Theater Pub. As we are talking this hour about media and politics and media coverage of the campaigns and welcoming your input, Kathleen Dunn is coming after 9 o'clock. Kathleen, I know, has a number of different guests. We'll be talking about campaign issues and voting issues. I know she'll have students talking about the youth vote. I think Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett will be with us after 9 o'clock this morning. So our talk about politics and the upcoming elections continues until 11 o'clock this morning. Right now, we are very happy to have with us a panel of guests talking about media and the presidential race, and not just the presidential race. We can talk about other races as well, anything regarding media and politics that's on your mind. Eugene Kane is with us. Eugene, longtime columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Jessica McBride is with us, a senior journalism lecturer at UW-Milwaukee. And Sumana Chattopadhyay, an assistant professor of communication at Marquette University. If you'd like to join us, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We have callers, so let's go to Amy in Appleton first. Hi, Amy, you're on the air.
Hi, Joy. I just wanted to mention that yesterday, and I believe it was the hour before the debate, Bill Lehrer made the comment that the two sides had had a memo of understanding regarding the rules and the back and forth of how the debate should go and what the rules were. And a couple hours earlier in the afternoon, they reneged on this memo of understanding to the point of Candy Crowley not even supposed to be on the stage. And that she was not allowed to do certain things that in the memo, you know, were stated. And so she was completely flabbergasted. And the situation behind the scenes, I guess, was like having a fox in the chicken coop. So I don't think everybody came out there with a clear mind, I was just kind of surprised that there was trouble like that behind the scenes, you know, right before the debate.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Amy, for the call. Well, let me ask you, Jessica McBride, shouldn't a moderator, I mean, what do you make of the campaigns being mad about Candy Crawley's role?
Well, what it speaks to, I think, is that there's just this belief on the conservative side of the spectrum that the media is biased and that the moderators are also biased, that they have a take. And, academic research on the questions of media bias is complicated. It's not that simple. But the bottom line is that's the perception out there. It's very hardened. I think to some degree it's become a political strategy on the right to make the traditional media the foil. And I guess I think then the traditional media might want to bend over backwards in the interest of fairness and, for example, not pick a moderator, as we saw with the previous moderator in the last debate, who had attended the wedding of one of the candidates.
Martha Raddatz.
Right. So that, I think, you know, lends itself to this perception that's out there, that's hardened, that's a political strategy to some degree, and has an element of truth to it,
right.
I think.
Sumana?
Actually, I can talk about this because we just had a panel on this a couple of days back at Marquette University. There was a fascinating presentation on media bias. There is a perception, Jessica, absolutely, that the media has a liberal bias. But what has been found in some recent research is actually that if you look at sheer numbers, there isn't that big of a difference between how much the media covers liberal or, you know, conservative bias. What's very interesting with the new study that I heard about a couple of days back is that the media tries to, a ton of reporting that happens in the mainstream media on bias actually reports on how the conservatives are talking about bias. And that in itself creates even more, strengthens the perception of bias in the media. That's a fascinating result because it tells you that perceptions are built because in the first place, the media is just reporting what the others are saying, and that kind of intensifies this perception already that there is bias, but technically there isn't as much actually that research shows in terms of this bias in coverage in most elections. So, but I also kind of go back to the moderator comment. I think with the first debate where Jim Lehrer constantly said, I will let them talk, I'll get out of the way, I'll be the fly on the wall. And he wasn't given a very good report, you know, scorecard either after the debate. So there is a very fine line, I think, because sometimes if you go back to the Lincoln-Douglas debates, you cannot have a debate like that in today's world. The moderator has to step in because in the first few minutes when Romney and President Obama were kind of sparring with each other, I saw, my students were so uncomfortable given how the conflict had kind of increased in the situation. So without a moderator stepping in, that kind of thing will not help the audiences because I heard some of my friends were independent voters saying they switched off the television at that point.
Although
they
we learned so something from that. You know, we learned something by watching them sort of go at it in a freer way.
It's true. But it also led to a lot of cynicism among voters, and especially there's enough of that out there.
And Eugene, any thoughts on?
Well, it was amusing to me. Crawley pretty much announced that she was planned to go rogue the way I remember. So I'm not really sure why people were all that surprised. I think the role of the moderator, you can see from these first three, including the vice presidential debate, the moderator has now taken on a new role. They're almost like they really do feel like they're almost part of the process. And a lot of them are well-known media types who don't suffer from a lack of ego either. So to me, that's just a new way of introducing the moderator to these debates. In terms of media bias, I'm always dumbfounded that in a country where the largest cable news network is Fox News, and even in locally here, where the dominant radio presence is right-wing radio, why people still insist that there's this liberal bias in the media. I guess it depends on what media you're actually listening to.
Let me just ask you both just to comment briefly before we go to many more calls and comments. Are we getting the information we need to make an informed decision in this election, in your perspective? Do you think so, Eugene?
Well, of course, we're not getting all the information we need, and that's partly due or mainly due to the candidates, both of them. They're not really divulging all the information. You can say Romney is very vague on his plans for the future and all the promises he's made. You can say the same thing about Obama, although I think Obama did a better job of basically saying he's going to continue doing the things he has done and listing the accomplishments he's had that he doesn't get a lot of credit for. But, of course, we don't get all the information we need. The media is partly to blame for that. But it's the candidates. The candidates are set up in this mindset where you don't give voters all the information. You've tried to get elected first.
Mm-hmm. Sumana?
Are we talking about the campaign in general or just the debate for that question?
The campaign in general.
I think it's a... You know, it's a question that is more nuanced because I think there's a lot of information out there. There are so many outlets. There are so many fact-checking organizations. But what's happening is that if we just talk about the mainstream media and television, then you could say that maybe not. Because oftentimes, even past research has shown that a lot of television news, for example, only covers horse race most of the time. What are the poll numbers like? And there is enough research that documents that, which is why we have all these political ads in the first place. Because, you know, though we don't like them, there is research that shows that in a ratio of three, you know, people get a lot of information from those ads in terms of issues just because candidates talk about issues in those forms of messages. But yes, I mean, there is more out there. If a person is willing to seek it out, if they have the time and the energy to seek it out, it's all out there thanks to the internet and all those websites,
Jessica,
that exist.
I mean, I agree with Eugene, actually, that, you know, the media is not a monolith and we should probably define which media we're talking about. It's a very complex media landscape, you know, in the modern era. I would say the information's out there. You know, it can be difficult sometimes to assess the credibility of it, you know, especially if it's flying around social media. I think, though, pretty much everybody knows where the candidates stand on the different issues, I think, and how that breaks down. And what's sort of interesting to me is I think because of that, and there's so few true undecided voters out there, I think, the debates are sort of boiling down to this body language contest, you know, of who can be more dominant, you know, after Romney was giving kudos for dominating the first debate and being so aggressive. You know, now you saw it in the vice presidential contest or debate and now in the debate last night that everyone's sort of vying to be the most aggressive and see who can interrupt the most or something. And you're seeing these social media memes flying around where it's not about the issues anymore. It's about Joe Biden's smile or, you know, and his laughing and things like that at inappropriate moments. And the public debate is sort of hardening through these social media instantaneous memes that don't have that much to do with the issues and sort of take the presidential election in different conversation directions.
We have other callers, so let's go to Saeed in Milwaukee next. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yes, and I'm in Green Bay. And thank you so much for taking my call. I wanted to give an unceremonious F to the media for the coverage of the cover up that's going on regarding Benghazi. And this came out in the debate last night, and Crowley essentially corrected Romney incorrectly, and in fact she is now on record as having said that Romney was right, but chose the wrong words. But let's step back to the bigger picture. The bigger picture is this: there is a narrative that Bin Laden is dead and Al Qaeda is no longer a threat or is non-existent. This events of Benghazi are not consistent with that narrative. This is why our government has lied to us, and our media is letting them get away with it.
Let me hold you there, Saeed, because I want to get our listeners to react. Sumana, our caller thinks that our media is undercovering President Obama and the mistakes in Libya.
Well, I guess I don't think so. I think the media has been covering Benghazi, and, you know, it's kind of the news cycle. I think when the event happened, the media covered it quite a bit. And if this had not been campaign season, probably it would have gone on for a little longer. But we are in the midst of a big presidential election. Other issues happen. Gaffes happen. Something else comes on the public's agenda, and then the media kind of starts covering it. So I don't think it was a premeditated thing. It's just that when we are in the middle of a campaign cycle, things change from minute to minute. But I think there was quite a lot of coverage when it happened. And then it's just that we are dealing with a shorter news cycle these days.
But the follow-up hasn't really been happening as aggressively as some people think it would be happening if, say, George W. Bush were the president. You know, it just does seem, perhaps in totality, that the media is not aggressively holding President Obama's feet to the fire about, you know, this decision by security officials to reject calls for additional security from even the ambassador himself, apparently. And, you know, I read some of the foreign media, and I found it interesting that I've been learning more details about those kinds of questions from some of the British media than I have been in the American media. You can find it, but it just doesn't seem to have the tone and tenor of some of the attacks that we saw, you know, on George W. Bush, for example.
Didn't the president, though, last night, if I'm not mistaken, say we are going to get to the bottom of this, we're investigating this, we will, once we have all the facts, say what happened?
Well, there are questions now. You know, there are serious questions now, and Hillary Clinton's coming out and saying this or that, and I don't think he should get away with just being able to say, well, we'll punt the ball down the road and answer serious questions about it later.
So do you think, Eugene, that the media are being too soft on President Obama on this issue?
Well, no, because I think what would happen if they started to react to Obama's critics and put his feet to the fire over this foreign affairs event that happened, you know, relatively short time ago. And again, it happened half a world away. And he spoke, I think, last night of the difficulties in terms of gathering all the information immediately and making sure you have the facts before you come out and make statements like Romney did about this very serious foreign affairs issue. My sense is that we're in the middle of a presidential campaign, so they're going to jump on every little thing and try to use it against him. It really smacks to me of a comparison between 9/11, where we later learned that George Bush had received information warning him about planes attacking the World Trade Center towers and did nothing on it. I think that was a more egregious lapse in national security than what's happening here. This is something that's being blown up, even though it's tragic because lives were lost.
It was our first ambassador murdered since 1979. I mean, and the embassy and the ambassador himself had been requesting additional security, and the State Department had rejected that, and you think that's not an issue that he should be held to the fire for.
And I think,
seriously,
you know, again, all information isn't in yet. People can jump on this and leap on this all they want. But I mean, again, there are a lot more things happening in foreign affairs that are a lot more.
Exactly.
And we have a lot of other issues to cover as we're just talking about media coverage in general of election 2012. It's not just on last night's debate, though that's what it seems most of our callers do want to talk about. Let's go to somebody who's in our audience. Joan in our audience has a question. Hi, Joan.
Hi. I'm glad to meet all of you because WHAD is my lifeline and my information from the world.
Thank you.
I dream about what's on BBC at night if I leave it on. I dreamed about Cuba the other night. Why? Because it was on BBC. But to keep me sane in all of this information, I'd like to know what the place of humor is in the media coverage of all of this.
Do you want more of it, Joan?
I am in love with Stuart Colbert.
Okay.
And I only get to watch them once or twice a week. But I think of them, even when I don't get to turn the TV on.
Yes.
And I think that humor is absent in the debate, and I'm glad it was last night, because this is serious stuff. This is the most important election to me in my lifetime, because I have not only grandchildren, great-grandchildren, I have kids who are 55 years old who are going to be affected by what happens in this election. And they better not be thrown under the bus, or you're going to have one hell of a mad old lady.
Well, thank you very much, Joan. A couple of different issues. Let me start first with, well, the role of humor in this campaign. Are the fake news shows, the comedy shows, doing a good job covering these issues? Maybe, Sumana?
Yes. That's the first question I get whenever people tell me, okay, you study politics, what do you think about Jon Stewart? And again, that's the first question I ask my students in my political comm class. And the thing is that I think, based on what I hear, that a lot of people, though there is this perception that people that don't know about the election or are very marginally inattentive to politics are the ones that watch these shows, that's not really true. It's because you won't be able to get a lot of the content if you don't know what's happening in the political sphere. And so what a lot of folks that are advocates of these kinds of political satire say is that, you know, politics is serious enough. When you kind of add an element of humor to it, somehow it becomes a little more bearable. And which is, even if you think about it, at one of the topics that everybody has been talking about from yesterday's debate was the candidates weren't empathetic enough to the audience. They needed to connect a little bit more. One of the darlings of town hall debates was actually Bill Clinton, because he had that. You know, he could charm people by his sense of humor and how he could connect. And even President Reagan had his own sense of humor. And so I think definitely, these kinds of shows do a good job of bringing out the issues and maybe acting as fact checkers in their own right. But, of course, if that's all somebody is listening to or watching, that's a problem, because there is the mainstream news, the traditional news that people need to be following as well.
So, Eugene, are you for or against more humor in politics?
Well, I thought Joe Biden was pretty funny. He did it. And what's interesting to me is that I have a lot of friends who watch Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert, and I think they just assume that I'm into that also. I actually don't watch many of those shows. I do appreciate the fact that those shows and Bill Maher, they essentially, to me, are at their funniest when they're making fun of Republicans. So I don't necessarily see why they've escaped being labeled with this liberal bias, because if you can say anything is liberally biased, it's all these comedy shows. They invariably seem to make more fun of Republicans than they do Democrats, but they have gained, you know, some stature in a political debate, so that's interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. Jessica, anything on this?
Well, I think it's interesting when you look at, again, how public opinions formed in the presidential election, especially in the wake of debates, and I look at the role of social media and, again, how younger people form their opinions about politics, and certainly it shows like Colbert and Jon Stewart, but it's also social media. If you want to find humor in the presidential election, go on social media. I mean, the memes on Big Bird were absolutely hysterical. But I was debating with one of my friends, a liberal friend of mine, after the vice presidential debate, and he just insisted that Joe Biden won that. And I insisted that he was underplaying the role of social media in forming public opinion on that. I said, who's going to be the joke? You know, who's going to be the joke? I mean, Paul Ryan was sort of faded away, you know, and Joe Biden, it was all these memes again about, you know, his goofy smile and he, you know, people comparing him to the Joker and all these different memes that were instantly being created and passed around social media. And I just think that that plays a key role in how some, you know, a segment of our population is forming its opinion on the candidates. It's sort of a new phenomenon to have such a strong Facebook, social media, Twitter kind of instant punditry going on.
That just reminded me of the day of the vice presidential debate. Time magazine ran the layout of photos of Paul Ryan working out. And a campaign aide to Paul Ryan said that Time used poor judgment, or that was inappropriate to publish those pictures. Do you think that was inappropriate?
That helped him. Come on.
You think
have you
did?
Seen the pictures?
I guess it depends.
I mean, he's got the, you know, the woman vote locked up with that one.
Was it inappropriate, do you think, Sumana, for Time magazine to show those photos on that day?
I don't think so. I mean, it's true that people might see it that way, but, you know, I think politicians are no different from a lot of those other celebrities that we see out there. And we see pictures of Britney Spears and all, you know, Justin Bieber. And so I think it's all fair game. I think it's not something that, it's not that big of an issue. I don't think so.
They did it with Obama. Remember the pictures of him shirtless in Hawaii coming out of the, onto the beach?
So it's happened.
Was there any humor in that, Eugene? Paul Ryan's pictures?
Well, I think the thing with Paul Ryan was I think they also caught him, you know, inflating the number of lifts that he did during his exercise routine. So, so that's been a continuing problem with him.
Well, we'll talk about some other maybe more important issues as we continue talking about media and the coverage of the presidential race and election 2012 in general. We're welcoming your comments about how you rate the media's job, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk at WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are broadcasting live from the Pabst Theater Pub in downtown Milwaukee, and we hope you join us. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, broadcasting from the Pabst Theater Pub in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn will be with you after 9 o'clock. Kathleen also will be on location, and you are invited, if you're in the Milwaukee area, to come on down and join us on location at the Pabst Theater Pub. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about media coverage of politics during this hour. We have with us a panel of guests, including Sumana Chattopadhyay, who is Assistant Professor of Communication at Marquette University, Jessica McBride, who is a Senior Journalism Lecturer at UW-Milwaukee, and Eugene Kane, a longtime columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Eugene, I wanted to ask you, you have a new role at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You're still writing a column, but it's not not as frequent now.
Yeah, my Metro column has been discontinued, and I have taken a buyout from the Journal Sentinel, but as part of the arrangement, I will continue to have a week a presence in the Sunday newspaper writing a regular column.
Well, we're glad of that, and I hope that means you're going to do more radio, too, now.
No, we can talk about it.
Well, let's talk with Luke in Chicago, who is waiting. Hi, Luke. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. So you asked for our feedback, our rating, our grade, if you will, of this coverage. And I got to be honest, it's a big red F in terms of our mainstream media promoting democratic dialogue and offering, say, access to third-party candidates. I mean, there's been stunning silence from the mainstream media that since 1984, when the Commission on Presidential Debates took this process over from the League of Women Voters, that there's been incredible polling requirements for third-party candidates like your Jill Steins or Gary Johnson. And for many of us out there, myself included, who don't have a president they can, in good conscience support, I just want to get your panel's reaction to this seemingly lockout of democratic dialogue.
All right. Thank you, Luke. Let's start with Jessica McBride. Is it wrong that these third-party candidates are not included in the presidential debates?
I mean, you can't have everybody on the stage, but I think the caller has a point. And I think there's a lot of frustration in politics among the public about the sort of binary nature of politics. And people, I think, are craving another choice. But, you know, it's so difficult for any third-party candidate to get the attention of the news media, to raise enough money to compete in advertising. It's so incredibly costly. I think that's very frustrating to the electorate. And obviously there has to be a cutoff somewhere, you know, and there has to be some kind of litmus test for who gets on the stage. But I would like to see a process that allows additional voices.
I might make a little plug for Wisconsin Public Radio. The third party presidential candidates were invited, and many of them have already appeared on At Issue with Ben Marins just this week. You can probably hear those interviews at wisconsinvote.org. That's where we archive all of our interviews and information about the election. So we are doing a series of candidate forums with all candidates who are on the ballot in Wisconsin. If you're a ballot status candidate, you are interviewed or at least invited to be interviewed on Wisconsin Public Radio. So, Sumana, are we not hearing from these third-party candidates as much as we should be?
Yes, we are not hearing from them as much as we should be. I've heard this from a lot of people, this concern that, you know, there are more voices out there. In fact, a lot of my graduate students say that, you know, Jill Stein is the candidate they would vote for if they could, if she was electable. That's the whole issue that we have. And even, you know, in the governor's race that happened here with the recall, I've personally met with Hari Trivedi, the other candidate that was running for election, and he told me he was not being heard. You know, he did not have enough funds, of course, to have his voice heard. So, of course, that's the case. But I kind of agree with Jessica that there has to be a litmus test because we would have so many candidates. We need to have a basis that, for inviting them to some of these debates. We did have that with Ross Perot. You know, his presence created a different kind of election. But I still don't know how the logistics for that would work. But I think you're doing a great job giving them space to actually talk about their, you know, views and about issues.
Yeah, speaking of a litmus test, one of the third-party presidential candidates who's on the Wisconsin ballot is just a placeholder. The person who really wants to run is not old enough. So, you know, that's why I think you do need a litmus test. But anyway, Eugene, any thoughts on third-party coverage?
Well, I think if you're going to take third-party candidates seriously, it should be at the beginning of the process. Once you start to narrow it down, I just think most pragmatic voters now at this point between Obama and Romney, nobody wants to see somebody else up there right now. I mean, this is really in the thick of it. So even though I do understand and empathize with throughout the process, there should be more room for those voices. As you narrow it down, and we're now at, you know, at the serious time, I can't imagine anybody would want to see someone else other than Obama and Romney in these presidential debates.
Let's go back to our phones. Barbara in Waupaca is with us next. Hello, Barbara. You're on the air.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I tend to agree that we are not getting the information we need. And it partly, I think it is when journalists don't require candidates to back up their statements from the beginning and to put them in context as to what statistics they're including, what statistics they're excluding, then misinterpretations and misleading statements just tend to spread and are much more difficult to set straight. And I think that's a lot of the situation that we're in now, so that each candidate can just spout numbers back at each other and the constituents are confused because we don't know what they're based on. And I don't think it should be considered combative to request backup information like that about what studies, what figures, statements are based on. It's what's disturbing to me is that anybody can say anything on the social media. And much of the time it's simply disrespectful or relies on name-calling and is not based on any discussion of the issues. And it's really disturbing.
Thank you very much, Barbara. Let me get our guest to. There's a couple of different issues there, I think, in terms of the media are getting it wrong on with both sides and letting both sides get away with misstatements. But isn't Sumana the fact checking supposed to help us with that?
Yes. I can understand the frustration that people have because, you know, statistics can be slanted or misinterpreted. And if we just create sound bites based on the statistics, then people get even more confused. So I kind of absolutely can see where the frustration is coming from. But I would, you know, what I think is that there is a lot more out there. So voters have to take a little bit more responsibility and go out there and check out what the fact-checking websites are saying. Because sometimes it's just a question of time. You don't always have the time, let's say for a debate, in 2 minutes. You cannot actually put all that information out there. So I think voters need to take a little bit more responsibility and go out and seek those facts because they are out there.
What's a good source? What would you recommend?
Well, there are lots of sources like factcheck.org. I know that even NPR, I think, is a credible source. And so, and of course, you know, follow if you're on Twitter. There are lots of different, you know, sources that you could just go to who will check the fact every minute. So even while the debate is going on. So definitely we need more of that, because a lot of those statistics get thrown out there. And given that we are in the midst of a social media cycle, things tick very fast, you know, because a viral rumor spreads and then everybody starts believing in it. So definitely fact-checking is a must. We just need to seek out that information online.
Let me ask Jessica, to her other point was that she sees a lot of name-calling on social media in particular. Maybe talk a little bit about social media and how it's changed the way we follow politics.
Well, I think it's given more people a voice. Certainly, it often devolves into name-calling. That bothers me as well. You know, I have 3,800 Facebook followers. I try to get debates going about politics, and it's like herding cats, to be honest, to get them like all to be civil, and it's very frustrating sometimes. At the same time, you know, it's truly democratization of the media. You have the ability of average people to have a voice in the public debate more than you did in the past, and to develop an audience. And so I think, as with every new technology, there's an upside and there's a downside, and it's all in sort of how you use it and who's using it and for what purpose, I suppose. But I wanted to make one other point when it comes to fact-checking. And, of course, journalists should not be stenographers. I mean, their role is to check facts and do verification. But, you know, in the old days, so to speak, you know, who did the fact-checking? The big media did the fact-checking. You know, I guess the New York Times, Walter Cronkite or something. These days we have, again, you know, so many people doing the fact-checking, competing fact-checking. You know, again, there's some downside with that. You know, you've got a partisan media. You've got the conservative media that a lot of people think erroneously is sort of objective media. That's where they're getting their news. But individuals have a take. And so they're fact-checking through a take, or with a take, and people aren't necessarily realizing that. But then again, people on the right think that the traditional media has a take in the other direction. I guess my point is there's a lot more fact-checking going on, and the average person has a more active role in that. I think that's probably good for civic life, that more people are engaged in it. Doesn't mean there isn't some downside.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on this, Eugene?
Well, in terms of fact-checking, I've been amazed as a journalist watching the advent of all these fact-checking sites and truthful meters and pants on fire. And what's amazing to me is essentially just how little impact it seems to have on voters. Because if you really did a running tab of which candidate has been caught not presenting the facts, or which one has been flat outright lying, it never really seems to have to register much in terms of their popularity or their polling. I mean, this is a very close race between Obama and Romney, and I'm pretty sure, you know, both of them have had significant cases where fact checkers caught them completely wrong, but the voters just don't seem to care. On social media, I would just say that I'm a big advent of social media, Twitter and Facebook, because I think from the days when it was all about online commenting and newspaper sites and media sites where nobody was required to really give their names and they could be anonymous, that's where you got the real vile, ugly stuff. I notice on Twitter and on Facebook, most people are who they say they are, even though there are still instances for abuse of that. But that's why I see social media as being a much more truthful and authentic and even transparent way of getting people to say what they think about issues in the news.
Well, time to touch on one other issue that we meant to. We talked about it a little bit earlier. Are we seeing too much horse race coverage? Who's ahead in the polls? That used to be a criticism. Is it still a justifiable criticism? Eugene, do you think that you're seeing too much poll reporting?
Well, I'm clearly it's confusing people, because every other week it seems there's another poll saying someone's ahead, someone's, you know, their lead is increasing, the lead is thinning. And, you know, in general, to answer your question, I think it's hard to say it's too much, because how else can you tell, you know, who's leading? And I think we're all kind of programmed to look at it that way. I tell people the Electoral College is really the only poll that really counts in the end. Mm-hmm. And most people don't have a clue how that works. So I guess you need to just give them the horse race to keep them interested.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Sumana?
Absolutely. Horse race has always been covered in, you know, election message, the media's coverage of elections, and it's still the case. And the issue now, though, is that because I am currently working with a student of mine looking at how different blogs as well as traditional media use poll numbers in their reporting, and, you know, oftentimes there is this bad thing that happens that not always the best polls get reported on. And there is we have been seeing a pattern in our research that, you know, if it's five bad polls, that almost amounts to one good poll, if you're reporting on that. So also, what kind of horse race are we reporting on? And definitely, we need to pay attention to what polls we're reporting on.
I'm so sorry, that Jessica, I don't have time for a response from you. Too much horse race, though, right?
Well, I mean, it depends on the media. I think public radio does a good job of delving into the issues, honestly. You can find issue-based coverage, but you have to look for it in the right place.
Thank you. That's a great place to leave it. Thanks very much for being here. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.